Well, folks, 6:07 in the Twin Cities, 47 degrees. Esme Murphy with you on a Saturday night, along with our studio coordinator, Jonathan Lowe, Sloan in the newsroom, special guest in studio, somebody who was interested in broadcasting, a junior in high school, Alex McFarland. So, Alex, thank you for coming in. You can say hi if you want.
Hi.
There you go.
There you go. Okay, and so, you know, when people say they want to go into broadcasting these days, I always say, you know, what do you expect? And I didn't realize that it was the prom tonight. So Alex is actually here for the first hour of his prom. So I said, you may actually really want to do this, because the thing I think a lot of people don't realize is that even people, somebody like Sloan, who's been in the business for a long time, myself has been in the business for a long time, Jonathan's been in the business a long time, just about everybody works really crazy hours, under crazy situations. And actually, the second half hour we are actually going to be visiting with Professor Jane Kirtley, who runs the Scylla Center, which is sort of the Journalism Center for Students at the University of Minnesota. So maybe I'll ask her if you have any questions you may want to ask her. I had actually brought her on to talk about the right press and the alternative press. And the narrative that they're presenting in terms of the alleged Trump collusion or the investigation. And it's interesting because that narrative has actually changed. Because when that story came out in the New York Times, it was about midweek, and a lot of Republicans were actually being really critical. And you know, Fox News was kind of had a completely different narrative on this Trump-Russia probe and all the allegations swirling around it. That tone has changed considerably. I was actually watching Fox News, so it'll be interesting to talk to her about that. But welcome, Alex.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right.
May I say something to young Messer Alex here? Number one, thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Thank you for your dedication to learn the craft.
Yeah.
And you want to get into it, you got to get these opportunities to come in and see how everything sort of works behind the scenes.
How the sausage is made.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm impressed. This is incredible.
Well,
I don't know. To be actually on.
Well, maybe we need to bring you in and watch. Maybe Dave Lee at work or whatever.
Oh,
I mean, he's really impressive.
You want to talk about
the master when it comes to radio.
Yeah.
He's
crazy environment.
Or a John Hines.
Yes.
Or, you know, we have really some amazing people here. But anyway, thank you very much. I don't know if we're quite incredible, but we'll take it.
I'm blown away, so this is great. Yeah.
I do want to say one thing. I hope you got your date a really nice corsage.
I know.
Really, really nice. It is prom night, man.
I think I hooked her up.
Okay, good.
Nice. Brother hooked up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all we needed to know.
All right.
You got a good corsage. That's great.
But anyway, we have a really great show lined up for you. As I said, the second half hour, we are going to visit with Professor Jane Kirtley. And this is a remarkable time when it comes to media and the coverage nationally. You know, there are people who remember Watergate. I'm one of them. I'm old enough, and many of our listeners obviously do. And that was an event that unfolded really in the press. And to a certain extent, I think some of that's happening now. Now, we don't know the end game. We don't know where that's coming. But it's interesting to see the different portrayals in the press of the very same apparent set of facts or alleged facts. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to visit with an expert at the Minneapolis Heart Institute about a very disturbing story involving the death of a 16-year-old boy in South Carolina after he overdosed on caffeinated drinks. This is very serious. He had drank a number of caffeine-laden soft drinks, an energy drink, and coffee, and he actually died. So we're going to visit with Dr. Jay Sengupta. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly in just a little bit. So let's take a quick break. You are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 6:13 in the Twin Cities on a pretty drizzly night. I feel like we're all going to just float away here. And I just want to let you know that we've been following a story, a very sad story out of South Carolina, but one that actually is something that does happen. A 16-year-old boy died from an overdose of caffeine. He had been drinking large amounts of Mountain Dew, a cafe latte, and some sort of energy drink. And, you know, I think a lot as a parent, you kind of worry about maybe the alcohol or drugs, you don't really think about caffeine and what that can do to you. And joining me right now is Dr. Jay Sengupta with the Minneapolis Heart Institute at Abbott Northwestern. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, hi, Esme. It's good to be with you this evening.
All right. Let me ask you, how often does this kind of thing happen?
Well, unfortunately, these are not very common events, or at least we don't hear much about this caffeine overdose causing a death. But clearly, there are reports and events in the past where, particularly associated with energy drinks, there have been lawsuits against, for example, Monster Energy Drink Company. And this, in this particular event, we know that this individual took an energy drink in addition to caffeine in other forms. And caffeine itself is a stimulant drug. And in large quantities, it has effects on the cardiovascular system. It can be hazardous. But in addition, you have an energy drink that may have other caffeine-like containing compounds and potentially other harmful compounds. It may exacerbate the risk of caffeine ingestion. And you have a young individual who takes a large quantity in a short period of time, and it could potentially result in a dangerous or abnormal heart rhythm or other cardiovascular effects that could be hazardous to one's health.
All right. Now, I'm sitting here looking at my Diet Coke here, and I got to squint because I'm old, but 48 milligrams caffeine in 12.8 fluid ounces. I don't think there's not that kind of labeling on some of these energy drinks, right?
No, there isn't.
And why not? Because I did a story on that a couple of years ago where some girls got very sick at a, I'm not going to name the business because they're still around. They did change their policy, but they were selling kids additional caffeine shots that they could put in their drinks, like put in their Diet Coke.
And they
got sick. They were both hospitalized.
Absolutely.
You know, why aren't there regulations or why aren't there requirements that these beverages that are obviously marketed to kids have some kind of, you know, coating on them or some kind of, you know, disclosure about how much caffeine is in there?
Well, it's a great question. And I think as more of these events and unfortunately tragic events like this bring this to this to the spotlight, there may be a movement toward doing that. Caffeine itself has been thought to be a relatively safe compound in moderation. And we find it naturally and we find it in most of our beverages. It's very hard to avoid caffeine. But clearly, there are certain forms of caffeine and certain individuals, younger individuals particularly, and when in the form of these particular energy drinks, they may be even more hazardous in large quantities in short periods of time. And so clearly, there's particularly with these energy drinks, there's a movement from the American Heart Association where we are trying to raise awareness and teaching people, creating awareness to try to avoid energy drinks or concentrated forms of caffeine, because it's not just caffeine, but it's caffeine-like substances in these drinks that basically augment the effects and can be dangerous in large quantities.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, are some people more susceptible?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some kids or even adults?
That's a great question. And yes, and the answer in young individuals, caffeine definitely can have more effects or more than you would in adults. So definitely the amounts that we consume as adults, we wouldn't recommend for children. And in adolescence, we'd try to avoid large amounts of caffeine. And also the underlying health condition of a particular individual may play a dramatic role. There may be underlying genetic or cardiac conditions from birth that could predispose an individual to having an abnormal heart rhythm. And in the right environment or the perfect storm with caffeine ingestion, with stimulant intake, with activity, heavy activity, working out heavily after basically gulping a large energy drink or large amount of caffeine can have untoward consequences in those particular individuals.
Right. And we don't know if this 16-year-old boy had any kind of underlying condition, at least according to the reports that I've read. But, you know, and obviously the parents, I mean, this is a tragedy, and the parents are anguished because I don't think it's something that they ever thought of. I mean, I think most parents are more worried about, you know, the teenagers consuming alcohol or something like that. I mean, that's what they're watching out for. But how does it exactly work? I mean, what does caffeine do to your heart? Because he suffered, I guess, arrhythmia, and that led to a cardiac arrest.
Yes, no, absolutely. Caffeine is a stimulant, and so it can increase one's blood pressure acutely. It increases one's heart rate. it causes restlessness, nervousness. And when taken in large quantities, and oftentimes these beverages are advertised as energy drinks that are prior to someone doing heavy exertional activity, whether it's a heavy workout or doing other activities. And so in that particular scenario, you have a significant rush in adrenaline and the caffeine-like effects in your body, and that potentially can lead to premature beats, fast rhythms, either from the top chamber, we call atrial arrhythmias, or from the bottom chamber, ventricular tachycardia, ventricular fibrillation. And those are potentially lethal fast heart rhythms.
All right. Now, and my kids don't drink coffee, you know, and I think if they wanted to start, I guess that would be fine with me. I mean, I know certainly, Starbucks and all the Caribou, there's certainly popular places for kids to hang out. What is, are there certain amounts that kids should be watching for? I mean, what is sort of, is there like a benchmark? Don't drink more than 4 cups of coffee if you're a teenager?
Yeah.
Or what should parents do?
Definitely,
or kids do?
Moderation is ideal. And if you're looking at an adult, it's kind of 400 milligrams is considered by the FDA and some Canadian organizations as a large amount, and no more to exceed that. That's actually quite a bit of caffeine. Surprisingly, though, you could get that much caffeine in a particular type of venti blonde roast at Starbucks. So it depends on what type of coffee you ingest. And if you're looking at teenagers or adolescents, you'd cut that percentage. I mean, you'd want not even 25% of that. So even less than 100 milligrams a day would be ideal and preferred. And more than that could be dangerous. So we should be aware that we should all inquire about how much caffeine is in the beverages that we drink. And that may be hard.
Some of them are clearly labeled, like my little can of Diet Coke here. I mean, it's not easy to find, but it's there.
It's there, yeah.
Right. And is there any push? Because when I did this story on these two girls getting very, very sick, and they turned out to be okay, there was a push to get labeling of these energy drinks, which are, you know, they're not marketing these energy drinks to people like me. I mean, they're being marketed to kids.
Absolutely. And there is a push. There are class action lawsuits and legal aspects involved, legal attorneys that want to have labeling, and Monster Energy Drink Company has been under the gun for that. I do want to point out that the energy drinks, there actually is recent research that caffeine by itself, it may be hazardous in large quantities, but the energy drinks in particular may have other consequences, because in addition to caffeine, there are other substances in those drinks that have caffeine, but there are other substances that we don't necessarily know how they affect the cardiovascular system. And in that particular combination, these proprietary energy compounds that are in these energy drinks, they may have other hazardous effects. And so there was actually a recent article published in the Journal of American Heart Association where they compared energy drink type compound with caffeine to the same amount of caffeine alone. And the compound in the energy drink actually had more adverse electrical consequences on an individual's EKG, as well as more different blood pressure effects, more so than caffeine alone. So there in particular is where potential labeling and awareness needs to be more vigilant in terms of avoiding those people from taking those energy drinks without knowing the consequences.
Okay, my guest is Dr. Jay Sengupta. He is with the Minneapolis Heart Institute at Abbott Northwestern. And we're talking about the tragic death of a 16-year-old South Carolina boy who died from a caffeine overdose. He had a heart attack after drinking soft drinks, Mountain Dew, coffee, and an energy drink, really right on top of each other. Are some types of caffeinated beverages better than others?
Yeah, so the caffeine in its form it can make a difference. And so there's conflicting evidence when you look at coffee, because there is some evidence that maybe a moderate amount of coffee can actually be reasonably good for health and prevent heart attack. But again,
run that by me again.
So there's evidence either way. So there's some evidence that coffee in a large amount can cause heart disease or lead to, like we spoke about, arrhythmias or even heart attacks, or even in very small quantities. But then there's also evidence that in moderate amounts, maybe 2 to 3 cups a day for a year, there's there's evidence that it might actually prevent heart disease. So the problem is...
Really? I had never heard... I mean, that's kind of like the alcohol thing, because you hear, yes. You know, reports that moderate drinking, even of spirits or wine, can be beneficial, but then other people say it's not or whatever.
But it alludes to your question, because what it may not be caffeine itself, but it may be other substances in the coffee or in the beverage that you're containing or you're drinking, and it also may be the way that these studies were carried out. So there's a lot of confounding variables. So it's very hard to say one way or another that any of that, and clearly that's not endorsed by the American Heart Association or anything. So at this point, you just have to be very cautious about caffeine and avoid in large quantities. Basically, moderation is the way to go.
Well, let me ask you about this. Like, you know, because back in the day, when I was a kid, one of the things that people took to stay up and study was a product called No-Doze. I don't know if that's around anymore. It's still around. and it's a pill. And, you know, it did make you, it certainly worked, you didn't sleep, but it also made you kind of jittery and the heart was racing and,
Absolutely. And
you know, it certainly was effective in keeping you up, but I remember feeling uncomfortable with the way it was making me feel. I was up though, but when do you know, I mean, just having your heart race or feeling jittery is that... When do you know that it's more serious, or when should a kid know, or is it a different response?
Oh, that's a great question. And the answer is, if you're really feeling palpitations that are ongoing, meaning that you feel like your heart's racing, if you feel dizzy, lightheaded, if you're blacking out or potentially nearing the point where you're blacking out, that could be potentially hazardous. You'd want to get immediate medical attention. And clearly that type of drug, I mean, if you were to increase your caffeine consumption, and that particular type of agent has a lot of caffeine, that clearly you might feel extra flip-flopping of your heartbeat because it...
Well, yeah, I remember that distinctly. And I was not somebody who was drinking... This is in college, I think maybe even in late high school, and I was not a coffee drinker, so I was coming in cold. I mean, do you build up a resistance?
Oh, and that's a good point, too, because clearly if you are taking this only for the first time, or you're taking it only once in a while, you'll definitely potentially have more effects from the caffeine, and you'll feel them more than you would if you're a regular coffee drinker or a regular caffeine user.
Okay, because I think that was definitely going on, you know, with me. And I don't know, obviously, this is, you know, a time of year when a lot of kids are feeling a lot of pressure to do well on tests. And
Definitely.
So, you know, we don't know if that was a factor as well. But I think that, you know, I think some kids obviously do consume coffee or energy drinks. But I think that if you're drinking
our advice would be to try to avoid as much as possible that type of caffeine ingestion in that form. Because in that situation, you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what underlying underlying genetic or cardiac condition one may have. And so, if you have intake in that form, even with that degree of stress, it can have untoward consequences. And so, it's always best to check with your physician and make sure. And try to avoid those types of ingestions to avoid the potential side effects.
And obviously, you know, this is a teenager. What about because I think you know, sometimes I see kids that are 9 or 10, you know, 8 or 9 with a big thing of Mountain Dew, and I'm going, ugh.
Yeah.
Obviously, teenagers are, you know, have a certain level of independence, and they're going to, you know, drink caffeinated beverages. But is there a cutoff or an age where you recommend for younger children no caffeine at all?
Yeah, I would say adolescents or less. That would probably not recommended for children and for adolescents. And as one gets into their teenage years, they need to be made aware that caffeine is a drug and a stimulant, and it can have side effects. And they need to be made aware of these symptoms that we've discussed.
Right. And then also maybe saying, especially with these energy drinks that have higher levels and aren't labeled.
Absolutely.
Saying, hey, this is like not good for you.
and to avoid completely energy drinks. So in all their different forms, and they're advertised on a regular basis, just as you mentioned, and to be aware that these can be potentially hazardous and even life threatening in certain potential circumstances.
All right. Well, Dr. Jay Singh Gupta, thank you so much. This is great information. And I think, you know, a lot of kids are drinking these. Kids are combining them with a lot of other things. And I think it's important to know. And I think certainly even younger kids are picking them up as well. So we certainly appreciate your visiting with us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. That is really interesting because I don't think it's something that people really think of a lot. And obviously, it's something that we should think about. Well, we have much more ahead on this Saturday evening. We are going to visit with Professor Jane Kirtley of the Scylla Center about the coverage and the different kinds of coverage we're seeing from conservative-leaning news media versus more liberal-leaning news media versus mainstream news media. Is there such a thing as a mainstream news media? All of that's up for grabs here, folks. But certainly, if you turn on Fox News at times in the past week, or two, or even in this certainly election cycle going back to the presidential race, and you then turned on CNN, you'd see very different things on the air. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I do think that difference was muted a little bit towards the end of this week as the disclosures just kept barreling down about the president and the firing of James Comey. I'll also be interested to hear what Professor Kirtley thinks about the analogies that are already being drawn to Watergate. Some people, I think myself included, think that that certainly the end point is we don't know, and maybe that's premature, but it's interesting certainly to speculate. We also going to have a very interesting discussion in the 7 o'clock hour about a very important item that's a little nerdy, but it's net neutrality and who will control the Internet. The president's administration, the FCC, has rolled back regulations that were put in place by the Obama administration to basically keep the access to the Internet sort of free and equal. And this will change things. So we'll visit with an expert about that. And then in our 8 o'clock hour, Professor David Schultz, about all that's going on at the state capitol, or maybe we should say all that's not going on at the state capitol, and certainly the latest involving President Trump, who is in Saudi Arabia as part of a 9-day world tour, his first trip abroad since becoming president. So keep it here. We're going to take a break, give you some weather, and we'll be back with Professor Jane Kirtley.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 6:36 in the Twin Cities, 48 degrees on a drizzly, kind of cool, not very May or spring-like feeling day at all. Well, this half hour, we are going to talk about the competing news media coverage of some really extraordinary events that are occurring in connection with the investigation into President Donald Trump's campaign, whether there was any collusion with Russia, the investigation into Russian interference into the presidential election. And I found a fascinating article in the New York Times earlier this week talking about the different narrative that is being put out by more conservative-leaning news organizations, and which is obviously different from those that are more sort of mainstream. As I said, maybe there is no mainstream anymore, and those that are more left-leaning. And the perfect person to talk about that, of course, is Professor Jane Kirtley of the Scylla Center at the University of Minnesota. Professor Kirtley, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Well, listen, and you know, it's funny, and I said this earlier when I was talking about this, I almost feel that prism, the article I'm talking about came out sort of in the middle of the week, and I almost feel that there's been a shift, even on Fox News last night, watching some very conservative figures reacting to the yet other additional series of extraordinary stories, saying that Trump had basically told the Soviets in that now famous meeting in the Oval Office that he had fired James Comey because he was a nut job, and to release the pressure, and that it made him feel less pressure. And, you know, even as I said, you know, the reaction on Fox was definitely almost comparable to what I was seeing on CNN and other things as I flipped around. What are your thoughts? Because this is really an amazing time.
Hey, It is very difficult to keep up with this story and these narratives, because I was doing another show earlier today for a Canadian radio station, and we were talking about the skepticism of many towards what they see as the unsourced or anonymously sourced story that the New York Times and the Washington Post has been churning out over the last week or so, and how, you know, the diehard Trump supporters continue to say it's fake news. They're turning, as you said, to alternative sources that are weaving an entirely different version of all of these events. I think myself, although who can predict any of this, that the tide is turning a bit, simply because we're reaching the point where it's not just a series of anonymous statements. We're getting closer and closer to documentation.
And I must say, you have a legal background as well, so I think right. You really are uniquely qualified here to look at this from that perspective.
Well,
as well.
You know, I do look at it from a lawyer's perspective, and you know, part of me says, you know, all these are all allegations at this point, and nothing has been proven. And what will happen is what so often happens in investigations and in trials, which is that whoever is deciding it, whether it's a jury or a congressional panel or a special prosecutor or special counsel, who's the most credible? Who are you going to believe? And you know, you can weave a narrative that says, well, you can't believe Comey because Trump fired him, and of course he's going to say nasty things about him. But you could also say you can believe Comey because he's a trained FBI agent and they write things down in real time, and that's as reliable as these tapes that Trump claims he had, which haven't seemed to have materialized. So, you know, ultimately it's going to come down, I think, to who is the most credible. And I understand that for Mr. Trump's, supporters, they see him as very credible, but I think increasingly the White House has been caught in one lie after another. And for me, the credibility is a central issue in all this.
Right. And obviously all of that will come out. It was Karl Rove, actually, that I was watching being interviewed last night on Fox News, saying that he really found some of these revelations troubling, that this was a drip-drip situation, and that there seems to be sort of a story that was building momentum. One thing I wanted to ask you about, though, what to me is so remarkable is the speed at which this is developing. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Watergate. I was a kid, but
I did too, but it took months.
Yeah, and this is just every night we're sitting there, you know, in the newsroom at 4 o'clock, and then there's a special prosecutor or there's yet another story, and it's really and obviously these leaks are coming from within the White House. There's no other place for them to come from. But well, the speed is breathtaking.
It's breathtaking. And I think, you know, one of, again, the alternative versions of this is that, you know, holdovers from the Obama administration, from the so-called deep state, are out to get Mr. Trump. What can any of us say until the sources are unmasked? But my own belief is these are coming from the White House. I don't see where else they could be coming from. So, you know, the one thing that continues to nag at me, and it always does with these anonymously sourced stories, is given the unusual nature of this administration, can we rule out the thought that there's some disinformation going on? I mean, and so I think the toughest thing...
Fake news. That's what the president would say, fake news.
Yeah. And so you've got, if I'm a reporter covering the story, the hardest thing for me is going to be verifying the stories I'm being told. You know, however, credible a particular source may be, the bottom line is you can't be 100% sure until you see the document, the smoking gun, whatever it might be. So it's a risky time for journalists, and I think they have to be even more careful than they normally would be. And obviously, this is a story of huge magnitude. It's not going to go away. And you know, the Trump administration has tried repeatedly in the relatively short time that they've been in office to do a lot of diversionary tactics. But I think this one is ultimately not going to go away. I do see reader comments on newspaper websites where Trump supporters, or maybe they're Russian trolls, keep saying this is all a big nothing burger. There's nothing here. I'm sorry. When you start putting these pieces together, it looks very, very difficult to rule out the fact that there is serious Russian influence in this administration. And, you know, what completely boggles my mind is the fact that so many of the Trump supporters don't seem to be bothered by that. I mean, the idea is that even if assuming that's true, they don't think it's a big deal. And that's the part that I just find mind-blowing, given the Republican Party's history in their attitude toward Russia.
Right. And it's you know, the last polls I showed or I looked at, and I should look at them again. Maybe there'll be a new set that come out tomorrow. Show that amongst Republicans, his support remains very, very high, you know, in the 70s
very
or 80s.
Very high. Yeah.
One thing that I think has sort of guarantees that this is going to be around for a very long time is the appointment of this special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, who's the former head of the FBI, who was first appointed to the FBI by President George Bush. So, and he was also the president or the director of the FBI under President Obama for some time. But I think that that's something because you and I can both remember, obviously, the Watergate special prosecutor, but also the special prosecutor for Iran-Contra in the Reagan era and also in the Monica Lewinsky case for Bill Clinton. Those that dragged on forever. I mean, it took a long, long time.
It does, but of course, you know, again, I think one of the differences today is that the way people's memos, statements, and so forth are being recorded and transmitted are very different than even as recently as the Clinton impeachment. And, you know, it's a lot easier to get that information out very quickly, to do it in ways that are pretty unobtrusive. And so I think there's going to be a lot more evidence coming forward much more quickly than might have been the case even 15 years ago.
You know, as I said, it is we shall see. But it does it certainly is interesting. And certainly, you know, another dynamic to it as well is the extraordinary use of Twitter by the president continues.
Yes.
Although
yes.
It's been muted. I know apparently people are telling him to just lay his supporters are saying we need less drama.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for him, it's obviously, one, a major way to communicate with his base, and two, I think it's his way of letting off steam. But, you know, as a lawyer, if I were representing Mr. Trump, I would take it away from him because this is just incredibly incriminating, potentially, in terms of just his rhetoric, his comments about people, the way he frames issues, and I'm sorry, calling it a witch hunt with a, you know, six exclamation marks after it does not make it a witch hunt. And he would be, in my opinion, much wiser to just stop it for a while.
Right. Well, listen, we have to take a quick break. Professor Kirtley, if you could stay on, I would like to ask you about the extraordinary developments at Fox News, the death of Roger Ailes, and the obviously Bill O'Reilly having to resign amidst a sex abuse or sexual harassment scandal. This is Fox News really has shaped a lot of the dynamic here, I think, in the last 15, 20 years, and certainly is a factor in the fact that President Trump won the presidency. So I want to get your take on that. So keep it here. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It's Esme Murphy on a Saturday night, 6:49 in the Twin Cities, 48 degrees, chatting with Professor Jane Kirtley of the Scylla Center at the University of Minnesota, that great journalism center there. We've been talking about the extraordinary coverage of these extraordinary events involving the president. But I did want to ask you your thoughts about Fox News and their current situation, the impact Fox News has had, and the impact that somebody we lost this week, the former president of Fox News, Roger Ailes.
You know, not like we can wrap this up in, you know, a 5 second.
But it's
because the impact was extraordinary. I mean, Roger Ailes was somebody who realized the necessity of packaging political candidates and packaging the news. He was someone who was able to convince people that they had a right to be aggrieved because the mainstream media, according to him, was leaning left and not giving conservative views a fair shake. Master showman in that sense. And to me, Trump is just the, you know, he's the apotheosis of that. He is the embodiment of what Fox was all about, catering to a certain segment of the population who feels that their views were denigrated and they were left behind, and exploiting that in a way. You know, I the idea of exploiting a medium to make money, there's nothing new or novel about that. But to me, what I see so problematic is that I think it was, for me, fundamentally dishonest. There were some journalists, and I would include Mr. Wallace at Fox, who I have respect for, but I think as an institution, it was very driven by ideology, even though it always said it was being fair and balanced, and that was all him. You know, there was no question that that was his brain.
Roger Ailes, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Murdoch, of course, was behind it all. And I remember years ago, a columnist at the London Times told me that you know, Rupert Murdoch doesn't care anything about the First Amendment. All he cares about is domination and money. And I think that to a great extent, that was true. I suppose if I believed that these were genuinely held feelings, I would at least be somewhat resigned to it. But for me, it was a very cynical development of what they saw as a niche, and very, very unfortunate, I think, for our democratic society. I'm not excusing any of the failings among other news organizations, because they are many, but the difference, I think, is that they were ready to correct those mistakes. And, you know, Fox really just enjoyed exploiting gullible people. And, I mean, I hate to say all this. I hate to speak ill of a dead person, but honestly, to me, this was a morally bankrupt operation. And, you know, whether that's going to change now with, you know, he was out anyway, of course, before he died, but there have been other firings.
Well, it was Gretchen Carlson, who's obviously from Minnesota, brought that multi-million dollar lawsuit and suddenly saying that she had been the victim of sexual harassment. And lo and behold, there were others that came forward, and she was able to win that case. And it almost was like sort of the dam breaking.
Well, and it's so, you know, reflective, I think, of the mindset there. And I mean, I hate to fall back on cliches, but, you know, the idea of making America great again, taking us back to the 1950s, it was also a time when women were exploited, where minorities were kept in their place. To me, this was not a golden era of American history, and yet it was something that Fox very cynically tried to exploit. So one of my questions is, as the younger Murdoch sons, you know, are coming of age and reshaping things, is there going to be a reset at Fox? And I will be surprised if there's not one. I mean, the thing you were talking about a little earlier about their different tone in just the last 24 hours, I'm not saying that means things have changed.
Well, I was saying that was, you know, Karl Rove, who obviously, you know, is the architect of the George W. Bush presidency. Certainly, you know, one of the most prominent conservative figures in this entire country. And he's basically saying, hey, listen, you know, this situation with Donald Trump and Russia and these stories, the president's got a problem here. So he was not saying, you know, and when you get people like Karl Rove saying that, that's significant. And I think, you know, ultimately the demise of Richard Nixon came about, well, it's because of the cover up and because of the tapes he had, but when he started losing traction, when you start losing the center of the Republican Party, you're going to be in trouble.
Right.
And there's a little bit of that happening. It hasn't happened yet, but there's a little bit of that. And the president is going to be in big trouble if that, you know, hemorrhaging continues.
He is, but, you know, I do worry about the reaction of his remaining supporters. I mean, you know, the words like coup are being thrown around, and I'm very concerned about how this ends. I mean, you know, we remember what happened when Nixon resigned. That was unfortunate, you know, from some perspectives, but ultimately Gerald Ford, you know, he pulled things together and we kind of recovered from it. I don't know who's going to do that if ultimately the Trump presidency crumbles. So I am not feeling real optimistic at the moment about how that's all going to play out.
So Fox News, unclear in your mind whether they are going to alter a little bit or perhaps soften their tone. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people, they have an awful lot of people who really love watching them.
They do, but that is an aging demographic, and I think that Murdoch's young, you know, sons see this is not going to be profitable in the long term. And I just keep going back to that. This is all about money, and if they decide that a shift in focus is going to be more profitable, I think that's what we're going to see there.
All right. Well, listen, Jane Kirtley of the Scylla Center, thank you so much. It is a pretty amazing period of time in our American history.
We are living in interesting times, as they say. Thank you so much, Ed.
Okay, take care. All right. Bye. She is a very knowledgeable individual, obviously strong views on Fox News. And yes, you know, I think that you could say that there would not have been a Donald Trump without Fox News. I think that's plausible. But I will say, you know, I always go back when people talk about Donald Trump supporters. I go back to that rally he held 2 days before the election, and it was here in the Twin Cities. It got very little notice in terms of, you know, advance notice. I think they put it together in, you know, 24 hours. It was like on Facebook. And he had thousands and thousands of people there. People were actually leaving their cars on Highway 77 to jump over fences to see Donald Trump speak at the Twin Cities International Airport. I didn't think he was going to win, but I remember just looking at that, and this was the Sunday before the election, and saying, this is something. I mean, this is a phenomenon here. And the passion that his supporters have is something that I think is something that really needs to be looked at and recognized. And to what degree those supporters, if this unravels, will they stay with him? I imagine some probably will, some probably won't. But it is it's going to be interesting, to say the least. All right, folks, you are listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. We've got much more ahead on this Saturday night show. In our 8 o'clock hour, we are going to talk with, of course, Professor David Schultz on many of these same topics. We also are going to talk about what's going on at the legislature. Monday's the deadline, folks. I feel like we come into this like every year this happens and there's a crisis. The problem is this year, it's really urgent because this is one of the budget years and they've got to get something done. If they don't reach an agreement Monday at midnight, then they are going to have to, maybe the governor can call a special session. If they don't have an agreement by July 1st, the state government will shut down, and it wasn't good the last time that happened. So keep it here. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO.